Hello, hello. Welcome to the Thoughtful Edge podcast. And today I have an amazing guest. This is JC Haynes, leadership coach for women in tech. And she spends a lot of years working in tech herself and then transitioned to more of the consulting side of the business. And she's helping other people in establishing their presence and their work and help them achieve their goals throughout their career, and especially is helping women in tech as well. And one other question I had to Jesse. First of all, Jesse, could you please introduce yourself to the audience and tell us about yourself?
Absolutely. So thank you. I'm so excited to be here today and having this conversation with you. So I've been in the tech industry as a software engineering leader for 23 years, working on a lot of large scale consumer technology. I think I added it up, and I've worked on products used by billions of people across all of the products I've ended up working on. I worked on, one of my teams built the Siri Music integration for the HomePod. So we added over 30 new Siri Music features for that. Also had another team working on Siri on Apple TV, and we actually got a technical Emmy for that integration. Prior to my days at Apple, I worked at Zynga on a number of our Facebook games back in the early 2010s. All the Bill games, the Farmville, Chefville, Cityville, all of those. And then I also worked at American Express on one of their credit cards. And then most recently, I worked at Tile. I did both partner integration. So I integrated the Tile technology into lots of different partner products, including Google Home, Alexa. I worked with Intel to enable Intel-based laptops to behave as tiles without needing additional hardware, and then became VP of software engineering and actually helped scale the organization from 29 to 55 engineers in 4.5 months in the middle of COVID while keeping our inclusive culture. And I also headed up the DEI efforts, the diversity, equity, inclusion efforts at Tile as well. I ended up leaving in July of 2022. I was going to say last year, but it's actually 2024 now.
Yeah, exactly.
That was 2 years ago now, in July of 2022, and decided to take my passion around, you know, retaining women in tech and helping build inclusive and high performing teams and turn that into my full time career. And so now I advise tech companies on helping them scale and build, you know, amazing engineering teams. And my primary focus, though, is coaching women leaders in tech to thrive and, you know, hit their dreams in this sometimes uncertain and chaotic tech industry.
What's an amazing journey. Yeah, you've been through a lot. And this is why I'm so eager to hear more about your wisdom and journey and lessons that you've learned throughout your career and everything you went through. And you mentioned that your mission is to retain women in tech, which is like pretty inspiring, and I admire this for sure. And can you share some maybe pivotal moment or experience when you realized that this is something you want to do and pursue as something important for you?
Yeah, so, you know, I've always been involved in some of the women in tech communities, but this really came up when I was at Apple. So in 2016, I joined Apple, you know, and I realized we had like a women in Apple community, but that was more kind of global across the company. And there weren't really places for women to like sit down and have deep conversations and really get into like, what are the challenges? And so I started Women at Siri. And that actually, after I left Apple, I was a little worried it was going to end up dying, but it actually turned into one of the largest sub ERGs and is now like Women in AI and ML. So I'm actually very proud of what we started there. And it was great because we created a safe space for us to really discuss like, what is top of mind? Like, how do we actually thrive in this industry? But I actually had a pretty challenging time during my days at Apple. And by the time I left Apple, I was actually feeling burned out. I thought I was going to leave tech. I was kind of tired of how women in tech were treated. And I was going through a lot of imposter syndrome. I actually thought I was an awful manager, despite the fact that people were telling me I was the best manager
Sounds
they ever
familiar.
Had.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. And so I took 6 months off and had a number of realizations. One is, you know, technology impacts our daily lives so much more now than when I had started doing this, right? I started my tech career in 1999, and I've been playing with computers since I was 5 years old, and I had my Commodore 64. And, you know, I saw, like, even in the last, you know, 23 years, like, that where I've been working on this, you know, tech impacts everything we do, right? Now we're, like, attached to our cell phones and everything else, but yet tech is not really fulfilling the needs of women and other underrepresented minorities. And so I realized it wasn't that I had a lack of passion for technology. It's like, I really wanted to be focusing on that side of things. Like, how do we build more inclusive technology that really takes these needs into account, which isn't just great for, like, the end users and the consumers. This is actually good for the companies as well, because if you actually build more inclusive products that fulfill more users' needs, you will actually make more money and more revenue as well. And so after in late 2018, I said, you know what, I'm going to come back to tech under my rules. And I wanted to work somewhere where, you know, inclusion wasn't just lip service. And so I spoke to the, at the time, new CEO of Tile, CJ. And I said to him, look, I want to come be your partner engineering director, but I also want to lead your DEI efforts. I want to start a mentoring program because I had tried to start one at Apple as part of Women in Siri. And I had actually been told by the VP at the time that he didn't really believe in mentoring and I couldn't start it. And so I said, I want to start this mentoring program. I want to help lead your DEI efforts. And he surprised me. And he said, you know, I promised my wife and daughters I want to make Tile the best place for women to work in the Valley. And so that really inspired me. And so I joined and we really delivered on that promise. And we built a really inclusive, unique culture. And, you know, it wasn't just me. You know what? Every time I talk about this, I talk about the fact that if you want to change a company's culture and really build inclusion, it takes a team effort across, like, all levels of the organization to do so. But it's something that I'm super proud of. Even, like, a few days ago, I had somebody, you know, who I was congratulating on LinkedIn for a new job that he had. And he, like, comes back and says to me, Josie, I still want to thank you for, like, the amazing, like, role you had in creating such a unique and inclusive culture at Tile. And so, you know, I realized we had really created this unique, you know, community. And then during my Tile career, I was actually able to, during COVID, I saw a need for us to really scale the organization on the engineering side. And so I actually created a proposal to get myself promoted to VP of engineering. I would get my boss promoted to CTO so that we could scale the organization, and that we were able to do that. And I afterwards, I was like, we've done it. Like, we've created this inclusive culture, and I don't want to just do this one company at a time. And so that's what really inspired me to start doing what I do.
That's amazing. I like the parts about the story of the Tile, because I'm user of the Tile. Like, all the keys we have in the house, they have the Tile attached to it, not to lose it. And it's an amazing product. And I'm glad to hear that it's an amazing product built by amazing people now. Leveraging the amazing culture that you're probably a part of as well. So yeah, that's, like, very interesting. And that's really inspiring to hear. And I'm glad that you decided to pursue this mission. And The next question I wanted to ask you is about your leadership journey, let's say. So you worked at the big companies, Apple, Zynga, Tile, and then at some point you decided to start your own consulting business. And I believe this is a significant shift for everyone, going out from the company, like with a well-established paycheck and everything else covered, going to starting your own business might be kind of a bit risky decision. So can you please tell us about that?
Yeah, as I said, I had a real passion for it, right? And I actually was set up pretty well for success at the beginning. Tile ended up being acquired by Life360. And so I actually ended up having kind of 6 months of buffer, to help me kind of set up for leaving and starting my business. And I think the biggest thing was realizing that starting a business is so much about the mindset. People had told me that this was going to be a huge personal development journey to be an entrepreneur. And, you know, I assumed it was, but until you kind of go through the journey, you have no idea how much of this is so much more about like mindset and taking the right actions versus hustling. And that was a big thing for me, was, you know, I wanted to create a business that I could do in like 30 hours or less a week and not be hustling at it. And so part of my success has really been working with a business coach who's all about like, hey, how do we use our energy and really lean into, you know, manifesting things and really lean into the not just thinking about, you know, she says strategy is easy at the end of the day, but it's around having the right mindset, the frames, knowing that you're taking the right actions and not just trying to do everything. And so it's been an amazing journey. And yes, it's scary sometimes along the way, especially with, you know, changes in the tech industry. But I really realized, you know, I can make such a huge impact in people's lives. You know, as I said earlier, the products that I worked on were used by billions of people. And yet the work I've done in the last 2 years has been such more emotionally rewarding in so many ways than the work that I had done previously. And it's not that I'm not proud of the work that I did. I definitely am. But there's something about having somebody, you know, call me up and say, you know, here's one example. I had like a one-off coaching call with somebody who was feeling burned out in her role. And she asked me to share my journey and about starting my business and things like that. And she was really afraid. She was afraid that, you know, she'd worked at a very large tech company with a very successful paycheck for many, many years. But she just didn't feel satisfied. And it's so much of this is about taking the time to really ask, like, what is it that we want? You know, we've been doing this for a while. So what is it that we want? And so I told her my journey. I told her my story about when I left Apple and, you know, took 6 months off. And then I told her my story about leaving Tile and starting my own business. And then I didn't hear from her for 6 months. And she comes back and says, hey, Josie, I really want to chat with you. And she's like, I have a story I want to tell you. And I was like, okay, cool, sure. So I got on a call with her and she's like, Josie, I just need to thank you. Because of our conversation, I've started my own startup. I am the happiest I've ever been. And not only did you end up inspiring me to do this, because without the conversation we had, I would have never done this. Her daughter had been kind of against it because her daughter was afraid of, hey, you're leaving this cushy job. Are you going to be able to get back into tech if you want to in the future? And when she shared my story with her daughter, it also changed her daughter's mind as well. Wow. And so, you know, stories like that that like are so emotionally rewarding to me. And now she's going off and creating an amazing product that is helping other people. And so it's not just the effect on that one person, it's the ripple effect that I can then have on the entire tech industry.
That's incredible. That's incredible. And this is the stories that we like to hear all the time, right? Someone like is sharing their knowledge, sharing their stories. And what I've recently learned as well, that someone told me that our knowledge and our experiences and some lessons we learn, they don't belong to ourselves only. They are meant to be shared with everybody else for them to be able to use it and leverage and maybe use it to their own benefit and maybe to the benefit of other people too. And this is how we create this ripple effect, that, as you mentioned. You share something with somebody and then it goes on and goes on, just accumulating that effect for other people as well. Yeah, that's like... very inspiring story. Yeah, thank you for sharing. And you also have been very active public speaking, and as an active speaker, can you share something about the core messages that you're trying to convey while you talk, and how the speaking experience influenced your approach to leadership and coaching? Maybe some lessons you learned from that.
Yeah, so I started public speaking in seriously, I think, back in 2018. I started with a couple talks at Gracehopper around my story and my passion for retaining women in tech. So most of my talks are, when I was a Tile, actually, I did a number of tech talks on building our Tile infrastructure. But mostly what I speak about is retaining women in tech, building inclusive and high-performing teams, leading with empathy. And then I also do a number of workshops on this topic called positive intelligence. So that's a framework by Dr. Shahzad. He's from Stanford, actually. And it's all about how we have saboteurs in our brain that can hold us back and how to instead shift to what he calls the sage mindset and really overcome those and thrive from a more positive perspective. And I think my biggest lesson when I got into public speaking, which has really, I think, helped me in just even like running my own business, is that not everybody is going to love you. My first big talk that I gave, the one that I mentioned at Gracehopper, afterwards, I got feedback from it like a few months afterwards. And I had some people that loved me and I had some people that absolutely like did not love me. And the first time I ended up reading this feedback, I was almost in tears. I was like, I had people who hated me. I can't believe this. And I was working with a public speaking coach at the time. And he gave me this advice that I think applies to so many things. He says, if you were to walk into a room with 100 people and just talk to all of them, you would not expect that all 100 people would resonate with what you're saying, right? And when you're giving a speech or doing anything, right, creating a product, selling, you know, your services, it's the same thing. And what it means, though, if you have, because of the law of polarity, right, you have to have both opposites, right? So if you have haters, that also means you have people who love you. And you want to be speaking to those people. And yes, it's not about saying that you're going to completely shut down all feedback and not listen to constructive feedback. But there are going to be people who just don't resonate with you. And if you spend all your time focusing on worrying about them, you're not truly serving the people that are going to follow you, are going to love your message and really resonate and want to work with you or want to learn from you. And so that has been the biggest learning along the way, I think, from public speaking that has really helped with, you know, all like being a leader, being a coach, and growing my business.
That resonates a lot with me, like personally. I just recently was thinking about that as well. So as more you expose yourself, either on social network or going out and making a public speaking, talking on the conferences or at any other events, it works like this. Like, if the people like you, there would be a match between you and them, and they and the people that would like you, you would have maybe similar values with them. Maybe you will have similar like views on different topics, and then it would be some kind of a match happen between you and them, and that will help you to establish more close relationship with them, and maybe doing business going forward would be more smoother because like they already know you somehow from different perspectives. They've seen you talking, they've seen you like doing stuff, and they know what you're capable of. So it would make your collaboration much more easier. So it's just admirable how the world works and how the world connects people with similar values and views at the same time. Yeah, it's very, mm-hmm. very inspiring too. And you're also talking about tech and empathy. And I believe it should be some kind of special skill of balancing technical expertise with empathetic leadership, which is probably a crucial mm-hmm. part for modern kind of leadership realm and for everyone involved in this kind of managerial or leadership roles. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, so, you know, I truly believe that to be effective leaders, we need to apply empathy especially as our world becomes more polarized and there's more challenges going on, and even to be able to understand the diverse perspectives of our world so that we can be building better products. And so, you know, my favorite the definition of empathy comes from Brené Brown. She's a vulnerability researcher, and she talks about the fact that empathy has four components. The first is perspective taking, and that's really about being able to see the world as others see it and put yourself in their shoes. The second one is staying out of judgment, and it's about really reframing from judging somebody's situation or feelings and really having that accepting and open mindset where you can really listen. This is really where like active listening comes in. The third is recognizing the emotions in others, right? It's about understanding and acknowledging their emotions and really validating them. And finally, the last step is being able to communicate that understanding of that person's feelings back to them. And so I think applying these four principles is crucial from a leadership perspective. And I think, so one of the things I've designed is the empathetic management framework, which is like three different aspects of building empathy as a leader and within an organization, right? And so, given my passion for gaming, it has a little bit of a gaming flair to it. And so the first aspect is player one. And this is really about being an inclusive leader yourself and really realizing that it starts with you. It starts with yourself defining, like, how do I become more empathetic? How do I become more inclusive? And really taking ownership and committing to the fact that it's a journey and not a destination. And so really thinking about, hey, where do I need to slow down my thinking, where biases might occur? You know, where can I be more inclusive in meetings, for example? You know, how do I ensure that everybody's voices in the team are being heard? How do I ensure that we're really taking into account all the customers' perspectives? Then, now that we've gone from ourselves, now we need to look outside. The next step is really what I call a multiplayer mode activated, because this is around now taking these these practices and things you've built in yourself and really applying them to your organization. And so how do you create values and a culture that are aligned with this inclusive and empathetic mindset? And, you know, I think so many companies create values that get put up on a wall, right? And then they only get reviewed every 6 months when it's performance review time, or maybe once a year at performance review time, right? But instead, I say, create and define values that are tied to these inclusive and empathetic principles, and then define your ways of working in your company so that you are using these on a daily basis, right? So, for example, this is something that we did really well at Tile. We actually had our six core values, and each one of them had an emoji that we had created with it. And so, for example, in Slack, when we saw somebody using one of our core values, well, we'd post the emoji, right? And so then we recognize people for that. We would have quarterly awards based on the core values and who was actually amplifying them during our all hands every other week. Each slide actually tied back to one of the core values, right? We defined like our inclusive meeting practices to ensure that we had ways of working, right? So it's about how you're embodying this on a day-to-day practice. And then the third phase, and this is really where I see a lot of companies stopping here, but it's really where things really take off, is what I call is theory, craft, and full effect. And that's really where we are tying inclusion and empathy to our goals and our higher level initiatives. Because, you know, what doesn't get, if we're not measuring this, if we're not holding our leaders accountable to these things, these changes are never going to happen. And so looking at things like pay equity, for example, across the organization, or promotions by, you know, from different diversity lenses. Like, these are all things that we can tie to goals and actually make sure that we're measuring and executing on them. So that's how I think that we can really apply empathy to the tech side of things. And like I said, if we really take empathy and look at it from the customer perspective, not just our team's perspective, we will build better products because we'll be really taking their needs into account.
And customers will enjoy more using those products, knowing that they are built for them with the empathy in mind and with their needs in mind and their emotions in mind too. Because as you mentioned, like validating their emotions is a very important part of that. And I'm totally a fan of empathy, and thank you for describing that framework. That's really amazing and impressive how you're tying this all together in the whole like workflow of the organization, how you connect all the dots. Because often people talk about some empathy or empathetic leadership, just using them as a words, but they probably never going so far just to include it in their day-to-day kind of work style, in their day-to-day way of communicating, working with other people, and conveying these messages constantly. That's very impressive. Yeah, very admirable. Thank you for sharing. And as we are moving towards the end of our conversation, I have probably the last question to you, and it's about adapting to change. The tech industry is constantly evolving, and the world is evolving as well. And it looks like we're moving towards a lot of uncertainty, a lot of instability, not only in the world situation, all those like conflicts arising around the world, but in the tech industry as well, which is already disrupted by all that AI innovations and all new technologies that are appearing out there. So what is your advice of staying on top of that and maybe stay relevant and effective in this uncertain time and the time of change?
Yeah, I think first is building resilience. right? We are going to have a lot of change in tech. I truly believe that what a software engineer does in 5 years is going to look pretty different potentially from what a software engineer does today. But I think there's a lot of fear, especially because from around, I don't know, 2010 on or 2009 on, we've kind of seen that up until this last year or so, we've kind of seen tech just go kind of in this constant upward trajectory. And now all of a sudden we're having things like layoffs and all these things. And there's just a lot of fear going on. But if we look back to the tech industry, right, this is not the first time things like this have happened. I remember in the early 2000s, I was working at Sun Microsystems and we had layoffs every 6 months, right? Same thing when I was working at NetApp. It was kind of part and parcel of the industry. And I think we've kind of had such a long period of just like growth that there's a whole generation of folks who've never seen the kind of like ebbs and flows of tech. And so first, I think it's realizing that this doesn't mean the tech industry is going to fall off a cliff and they are all going to get fired, right? It's looking back and realizing, and I mean, think about it even going even further back, right? I mean, people, engineers used to do write programs on punch cards, right? Like nobody's doing anything on punch cards these days.
That's a huge change.
Some of the first code that I wrote when I first got into being an engineer was writing like cell phone software, which was like two lines of text on a black and white phone screen, right? And so how did those of us thrive and have thrived to have continued being successful? It's through learning and realizing that things are going to evolve. So keep up with the learning, you know, and also be resilient and be curious and realize that, yes, things are going to change. But we are all adaptable human beings, right? And I mean, sometimes we get scared because our brain doesn't like change, right? And we're going through a ton of change, as you mentioned, not just in the industry, but in the world. And our brain is built to keep things constant. And so about really learning how to calm yourself down. And that's where, you know, earlier I talked a lot around like mindset and how that was so crucial in building my business. And I think one of the biggest things with adapting to change is also tuning in to yourself, you know, whether it's meditating, you know, creating a journaling practice, right? Some way where you're really able to like tune in and get
ground
introspective
yourself.
And
ground yourself. And like...
Yeah. And it's, I think that is crucial for success. So I think mindset and learning and resilience are kind of my three cores on this adapting to change.
Makes a perfect sense, especially the changes are going to be here with us all the way. So we need to just embrace that and live with that and try to find the ways to get over. So anyway,
yeah, and I think embracing uncertainty, right? I think so. As engineers, we love predictable things, right?
Right.
I love control, right?
Yeah.
But the big thing I've had to learn is to let go of control and embrace uncertainty and trust that, like, in our own self power and in the universe that we've got this, like we will be able to succeed and thrive, and we have to just like let go of trying to control.
Exactly. Like we're here just to mitigate of something bad's happening, but like we cannot avoid it at all because it's how the world works. Jesse Haynes, leadership coach for women in tech and also advising companies on scaling their businesses, scaling teams. Thank you so much for joining me today, for having this amazing conversation, and for everyone listening us, if would be interested to talk to Jesse, don't hesitate to reach out. I will post your LinkedIn profile in the comments. Any questions about scaling the companies, reach out to Jesse or to myself as well. So I'm here, can be a big help as well. Thank you so much, Jesse, and looking forward to seeing you again on any other conferences or during some of the other public speaking opportunities.
Yes, thank you. And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Bye.